KALW.
So our hospital seems grossly unprepared for all of this.
Bay Area nurses are on the front lines of the COVID-19 spread.
Even though we don't have the surge of patients yet, we have this really desperate shortage of basic stuff like hand sanitizer.
Then, what happens to victims of domestic abuse during shelter-in-place times?
The fact that people are in closer proximity, forced closer proximity with the people causing them harm, is a big, big issue.
And a bilingual rapper draws influence from her grandmother's stories.
Particularly because, like, the ability to be able to tell stories comes from her.
I'm Henat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. This week, nurses across the Bay Area continue to sound the alarm that their hospitals are underprepared to deal with COVID-19. Nurses at hospitals from San Jose to Santa Rosa are protesting. KALW's Angela Johnston spoke with two on the front lines of the crisis.
John Pearson works in the emergency room at Highland Hospital in Oakland and told me healthcare workers there were already experiencing critical shortages before COVID-19 even existed. The first is beds.
In real terms, like if you walk through, this is what you would see. You would see patients that should be on a cardiac monitor in a room, in the hallway, in a bed without a cardiac monitor because there's nowhere to plug it in and we don't have enough monitors.
So an influx of COVID patients, he says, is only going to make things worse. Then there's personal protective equipment, like masks, gloves, and gowns.
Even though we don't have the surge of patients yet, we have this really desperate shortage of basic stuff like hand sanitizer, like disinfecting wipes. That's what we use to clean all of the equipment like dozens of times an hour.
Each time they take someone's temperature, they need to wipe down thermometers. He says they've been told to water down hand sanitizer. Other nurses have told me they've had to use patient gowns instead of their own.
We've had bosses tell people to spray down their masks and then reuse them and breathe in the chemical fumes.
The mask problem is widespread. There are med students organizing mask drives, hospitals calling on people who stocked up on N95 masks during the wildfire season to hand them over. And yesterday, Governor Gavin Newsom said the state is rushing to get protective gear for workers like Pearson, trying to secure 1 billion gloves, millions of gowns and masks. But nurses say they also need more of each other.
Oh, man, where to start? So our hospital seems grossly unprepared for all of this.
Robin Leffert is a nurse at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital in Oakland. She says each week they're seeing more children with COVID symptoms. And she says before COVID, the hospital was understaffed.
People were working double shifts. People were coming in on their days off.
This was back in November.
And then COVID came on and that it didn't get better. Like, we were still short.
She says she finally saw her hospital post job openings for new nurses last week. San Francisco just fast-tracked the city's ability to hire new nurses. And over the weekend, they hired 82. And there have been calls from nursing students across the state asking to graduate early and join the workforce. Leffert and ER nurse John Pearson say the COVID-19 crisis in hospitals points to a bigger issue.
Our healthcare system is not set up to take care of everybody in the U.S. It's just not. That's not the expectation. That's not how it works financially. It is set up to take care of anybody that can pay.
When healthcare is about money making and something like this happens, then we're in serious trouble because there is no way anybody's going to be able to profit from this. But if we look at it as healthcare is a human right, then there has to be the money and the resources out there somewhere for this.
Leffert says nurses and frontline workers are doing everything they know how to do to save people's lives and stop the spread of the virus. But they just need resources, supplies, staffing, and beds to do it effectively. For Cross Currents, I'm Angela Johnston.
That was KLW Deputy News Director Angela Johnston. You can find more reporting about how the coronavirus is impacting the Bay Area at klw.org/coronavirus. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Victims of domestic violence are especially vulnerable in this health crisis because abusive partners are now not leaving to work and working from home. And even if the shelters are open, a victim has to be able to make that call, which may not happen if the abuser is home all day. To understand more, I called up Bindu Fernandez. She's executive director of NARICA, a domestic violence nonprofit in Fremont. They primarily work with abused immigrant women, a population, she says, that's especially vulnerable.
Immigration legal services probably comprises the number one need our clients have, where it is this, I am tied to my abuser through my immigration status. Or my children are citizens and I'm not a citizen. And this sometimes unfounded fear of, oh, I might get deported if I attempt to separate. And many times it is the person that's causing them harm is telling them wrong information. Many times our clients have no idea they can call 911 or even what that number is, right? So it's just this very, and I will say that we don't just serve immigrants. So we serve anyone who's experienced partner violence. Intimate partner violence, right? And that's the official term for domestic violence is anyone who's experienced intimate partner violence, we will continue to serve immigrant or not, no matter what their gender is, what their race is, et cetera.
Right.
Yeah, but definitely there are additional complex challenges that immigrants face.
And add to that a situation that we are in now during these COVID-19 times where your abusing partner might be at home all day. What are you seeing now? What are you worried about at this time?
I will say, of course, the fact that people are in closer proximity, forced closer proximity with the people causing them harm is a big, big issue. We assume with the lockdown that homes are safe, and they're not. For all of our clients, their homes are not their safe spaces. Many times they are grateful for that time their partner is at work or they are at work. And sometimes those are the windows of opportunity that they might use to leave or to escape. And those windows are closed. There is no escape in terms of how do I get out and make an excuse to go to the grocery store, right? Those excuses aren't there anymore. I will say financial uncertainty is going to lead to an increase in domestic violence situations as well. People are afraid they're getting laid off. They're afraid they're going to lose their jobs. It's going to manifest somewhere. And so that's going to like rise up at home. And an example there really is we had people that we've served who just in the last week attempted to commit suicide twice just because they were in so much more closer proximity with their abusers, didn't really know how to reach out for help, assumed that shelters were closed or not taking any people, and we finally managed to help them with finding shelter. But again, what you will see is there is this new wave of what abuse looks like and new forms of abuse with COVID-19. Some of it includes the person causing harm withholding medication, withholding insurance cards. Sometimes it's the person causing harm saying things like, all your support structures are closed. Well, are you going to go to the police and the hospital and the court system now? And most people are like, oh, yeah, that's right. I'm not going to dare go anywhere there. Like none of these places feel like they have enough resources at this point, right? So, and of course, as we know, abuse thrives in isolation. So the more there are these external reinforcements of, hey, you need to stay home. There's no reason why you should be out. Though all those contribute to that abuse and isolation. And so, you know, of course, one thing I will continue to say to everyone we talk to is make sure that if you see neighbors and friends who seem very increasingly fearful of the idea of staying home, it is a red flag to consider and to think about, right? And to talk about in terms of, hey, are you okay? Is there something I can do to help? Can I refer you somewhere to a confidential service that can support you? But it's really important to be a little more vigilant and supportive of people that may seem additionally fearful about staying at home. And they look like our neighbors and our friends and our siblings, right? Survivors of domestic violence don't look any different from you and I. And it's important to remember that they may be successful professional women or men, but could easily also be experiencing domestic violence at home.
And after somebody reaches out to you, in normal times you would refer them to a shelter, but are shelters open right now, or what's the situation if somebody calls you and needs shelter?
Yeah, so right now if they call us and need shelter, we have a database where we know all of our shelters, so we will call them and we would try to place that person in emergency shelter as soon as possible. We don't know how that will evolve, and chances are the supply of shelter spaces will continue to decline. I would still say reach out and talk to your local domestic violence shelter agency and ask them to support you through it. What we specifically would do if we didn't find a shelter for someone would be to use our emergency funds and support them with an emergency stay at a motel or somewhere safe, right? Like a motel or a hotel, somewhere that they can spend a couple of days while we continue to try and find a shelter space for them. And I'm guessing many, many domestic violence agencies will also have emergency client funds that they put aside for these reasons. So I would still recommend to everyone that needs safety to reach out, because we will do whatever we can, and every organization that works in this space will do whatever we can to keep you safe. But I do believe that the reality will be that it will get harder to find spaces. I know there is a movement starting to talk to landlords and hotel owners who really are going to have empty rooms and spaces, to ask them if now might be the time that they say, hey, I will lease out my rooms for free. And so we're definitely having those conversations. Just to figure out, right, there is somewhere the supply of rooms that are available and somewhere all these people that need it, and how do we connect the two? So I think a lot of that will continue to emerge in the coming weeks.
It's a difficult time, so I'm wondering how you're doing, how your organization is feeling about your work right now.
Yeah, I mean, I will say it is definitely testing us in many, many ways. And there are some good things that come out of it. For example, we've always done support groups in person, and this was the first time we ever did a support group over the phone. And we were all pretty surprised by how well it went, right? And the beauty of things like that is it just suddenly increased the accessibility of a support group to anyone in the country versus what we had done locally for all of our 28 years.
Thank you, Bindu. Thank you very much.
Of course.
Bindu Fernandez is executive director of NARICA, a domestic violence nonprofit in Fremont. If someone you know needs help, call their hotline 1-800-215-7308. And if you can help with sheltering, maybe you're a landlord or you own a hotel, we'll show you how to get in touch with them. Go to kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. We know so many music venues have closed, so like we always do, we'll be putting the spotlight on local artists. Today, it's Choti Ma, When she left her hometown of Guanajuato, Mexico, she got into R&B and hip-hop to learn English. Writing poems and stories helped her make sense of her new life in the U.S. Now, the Oakland rapper has two studio albums out. Caldo de Hueso, meaning bone broth, is her latest album. In this piece from our archives, Choti Ma came by our studios to talk about how her songs address love, colonialism, and her grandmother's storytelling magic.
A lot of things were burned and a lot of things were taken out of our lands and are in different European countries. But what couldn't be stolen and what couldn't be repressed was the word, right? Was the oral tradition. And that is the line that takes us back to our roots. And there's a lot of strength and a lot of power in the way in which we talk to each other, in the way in which we share that knowledge. I grew up with my grandmother, who she left my grandfather. So I grew up with a matriarch in a time where a lot of women wouldn't leave men. And I was always so captivated by the way my grandma told stories. So I would ask her, can you tell me that story again? Can you tell me this? That's my favorite. Can you tell me one more time? And can you tell me more about this person? So I was always very curious, a curious little kid. I recorded her for one of the tracks, which is Venado Dos, where she tells a story about these two old ladies. And these two old ladies are her friends, and they're like in their 80s and 90s.
Le pregunté por qué estaba tan bien.
And she's asking them, why are you so, so healthy? Why do you look so good? And she says, it's because I was such a slut. And my grandma says it, you know, with such vigor. And she's like, you know, I had so many husbands, so many kids. And, you know, I think that's why I'm so, so healthy and I live so well. And then she asked her other friend on the other side of town. She said, why are you so well? And she said, oh, you know, I think it's because I never had a boyfriend, never had a husband, never had any kids. I think that's why I'm doing so good. And then she says at the end, and then I understood nobody has the absolute truth. It all depends on what life gives you.
Y ahí pensé, nadie tiene la verdad.
In this album, I was like, let me put her in the center of it. Let me really honor her, particularly because, like, the ability to be able to tell stories comes from her. So Atiza is the first single from Caldo de Hueso. It talks about the use of fire in the good way and in the bad way. So Atiza is a word that means has multiple meanings. Atiza means to revive the fire. And as a firekeeper, something I've been working on in the last few years, I've been learning how to take care of the fire. That you can't just pile up all this wood, right? You have to put the wood in a formation so that it actually can last a long time. You know, when I was in Standing Rock, I took care of the fires. And it needs the warmth, actually, of the body and the warmth of your hand. So that's one level. The other level of Atiza, it means to revive a conversation, right? And I feel like music is a way to revive conversation. So I talk about how if we look at just the colonial history, villages and our towns were burned down. And I also look at how that's connected to the recent fires in the Mission and in Oakland. When they don't want to deal with a population that has been living there for years, they burn down the building. In within 2 minutes and a half, I'm making an illustration of what is going on through my lens. So Government Sinners basically talks about the assassination of young black men and black women, and also in the way in which police, you know, with a different name, it could be Border Patrol or ICE agents, target young people. And not just within the United States, but even with the Mexican state, and how the Mexican state is complicit to the violence against migrants from different countries in Central America. Many times in a lot of my music, I talk also about how these systems are very much connected with capitalism, very much connected with, like, the way in which people consume. So it also talks about, like, the things that we buy make us complicit in the oppression of our own people and our own communities. Loca is about this woman that I dated from Puerto Rico, and it's about our love story. Because my grandma would always be like, ay, tú nomás le gritas a la gente. Y ya, no, a la gente no le gusta que le griten. ¿Por qué no haces una canción de amor? Algo así, más romántico.
So that's why this album has some like love songs. Con esa boquita tuya,
loca, tú me tienes. My grandma, she always sang too, and she always sang like very like romantic Mexican like boleros, and like still like I'll play a song on YouTube and then we'll start singing it, and then she'll cry and then I'll cry. I definitely went through a lot of emotional stages, like, through this album. Am I gonna succumb to fear? No. But it gets to a point where it asks you, the work asks you, how do you want to move the music? And it has its own thing, you know what I mean? It might have been made by me and all these other people, but the work has its own spirit.
That was Oakland musician Choti Ma, and that edition of Bay Area Beats was produced by Marisol Medina Cadena. While we can't go to see Choti Ma live for the time being, you can always check out her music online. Go to klw.org/Bay Area Beats. Today's team includes Janae Darden, Precious Green, Lisa Morehouse, True Quinn, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Sarah Lai Sterling. Our engineers are James Rowlands, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. No more breaking bread with me, cause now you're f***ing dead to me. I'm burning sweet grass everywhere that I go. I'm smudging, not judging as I twist up my roll. You're not my real cousin, ya tu sabes, you know. I'm better off without you cause you don't wanna grow. That's the truth, where's the lie? No more abuse, freedom, I cut me loose, set the fire. No more juice, come outside, want a monster out of me. Or retaliate tonight, but I'm saving my war cry for the spirits in the sky. Yeah, my love, baby, I bet that.